1963. Watership Down. Watership Down, Bright Eyes, the song that inspired a generation of lovesick teenagers in the 70s, visions of playful bunnies going about their business in the grassy banks of the English countryside, unknowing of the perils and dangers lurking near the water's edge, in Bath. To be more precise, the river bank. Pray, where is yon river bank located? I hear you ask. For those of us who were lucky enough to have access to a piece of suitable metal piping, a small quantity of wood, a minuscule amount of explosive material and a suitable selection of spherical projectiles. Combine these aforementioned articles with the enthusiasm and impetuosity of youth, boredom and an aptitude singularly associated with teenage males, and you have the cocktail mix of what I am about to reveal. Angry men, able-bodied, full-grown beer-swilling men, who shave twice a day are now intent on waving their arms and various tools of torture at a group of school children. Children who, having not been born into an era of water hip down, are now making plans to retreat from the bank on the opposite side of the river from the asbestos and tin buildings which formed part of the industrious establishment known as Stithert and Pitt. These wretches of unknown origin, having been recently cast out of an equally productive environment called Bath Technical School, have been recreating one of the more famous scenes from the film El Alamein, to wit, a small but nonetheless devastating example of a field artillery weapon. This beast is being powered by the manufacturers of Payne's 3D Bangers gunpowder, a small piece of blue touch paper, two bus tickets as a wadding, topped off with two ball bearings for good measure, has managed to achieve what Adolf Hitler's air crews failed to do in the 1942 raids on Bath. Halt the workforce of Stithert's cranes in their tracks. These men have realized, as did the good people of Bath many years before them, that their resistance to this onslaught is futile and ineffective against such a powerful force. With the odds stacked well in their favor, the motley collection of school children gather their materials together and disappear into what cover nature has provided in the vicinity of Norfolk Crescent, Bath. Within a few minutes, calm is restored to the waters, the men go back to their duties, no doubt armed with yet another story to tell their grandchildren and wives of how they stood shoulder to shoulder in the face of friendly fire. Wildlife returns to establish its territory again, fish dart out of the cover afforded temporarily by the weeds and stone overhangs, a baby rabbit unaware of the dangers of daylight hours or of the ensuing commotion pricks up its ears, listens, and sniffs for predators. The children, wiser beings now, aware of the awesome power they now possess, have taken their very first step on the evolutionary ladder of remote armed combat. This was but the first of many such happenings reported in the Bath area during the early 60s. Many of these incidents are still the matter of police investigation, even until this very day. Nobody, except you and I, knew the real truth. The long and winding road. The Beatles were due through any minute, the train that was to carry them onward to their destiny in London was long overdue. From the schoolyard, the pupils at Brougham Hayes could hear the strains of their new hit song She Loves You, coming from the back of Tony Watt's house at No. 2 Stanley Road, which is near to the rail bridge at the top of Brougham Hayes. A big old console television cabinet full of speakers, which now included a new-fangled metal Trebax tweeter, no less, and all of this noise being produced by a 50-watt quad-valve amplifier, was being focused out towards the railway line. In respect for their passing. A strange warm glow came over the big wasp's face, as he shook hands with the deputy head of the nest that he had just escaped from. It had taken 4 long and horrendously eventful years, but he had succeeded at last. Left long behind now, were the comic heroes of old, he had met new ones, and made more wasp friends than he could ever have dreamed of. Little did he know though that the nest would return to haunt him again. A few of the older wasps had escaped before he did, and some had lost their way in the world. He, however, was still focused on what it was that drove him on, the insatiable thirst for knowledge, and cider. The world that awaited him was so new and exciting. Much of it had changed while he had been away. Gone was the wispy smoke of his youth, replaced by the stench of the black diesel. The solid walls of his world, shattered and torn from the ground, ground hallowed for centuries by his forebears. The old West Gate building, where once he had seated himself and eaten with the rest of the black and yellow brigade, now beckoned to him in a different way. Far removed from the canteen of old was the first floor above, which held much material woven in time. Old Ted was there, with the lift, in dispatch, and Harry, the guy in the brown overall with the limp, was the first to interrupt the wasp's investigation of this shiny new world. He spoke with the magical words, put that microphone back in the mouthpiece of the phone in the rest room. Williams, a most masterly voice, without question, if ever he had heard one before. It was not long before the wasp had lost interest in his new nest and had ventured out into pastures new. On towards Milsom Street at the top of town, Huntley's, Old Bond Street, surrounded now by Bushes and Murphys, Pies and Sobels, batteries, bulbs, valves and vans, vans for the delivery of all kinds of wondrous electrical items for the modern home, custom legs for radiograms, cables for H aerials, 3 projection TV tubes and so much more. Girls, from Cawardine's cafe next door. This was more like it, just like old Tommy Best's in Avon Street this was, but it was not to last. The net closed in without warning. There he was, going with the flow, when all of a sudden things took a turn for the worse. He had been seen in the company of other wasps, in the vicinity of an educational establishment which has suffered much devastation. This was not war damage, but something much more recent. The vehicle that contained the wasp was blue in color, and made its way without heed from the driver, to a place of security for very naughty wasps. Within 2 weeks it was all over, and so was the tree on Mr. Pickler's flowers. Another story, another day. And so it was, wasp free again, at last, but free from what? Next time we have a bad winter, just keep this picture in mind. Use browser back button to return to previous page, to school. Watership down. One more outdoor lesson, but this time there were no teachers present. Stathert and Pitt. Scene of the crime. Victoria Iron Link Bridge. It crosses the River Avon from the Upper Bristol Road on the left, through the works and then onto the Lower Bristol Road at the bottom of Broome Hayes. Victoria Workshops. Photo taken in 1962. Lower Bristol Road, Bath. As the building was in 1963. The long and winding road. The finale to a beautiful relationship with secondary education. It had to end someday. Listen to the song here. Typical 1950s console TV. An old television like this was perfect for converting to a large speaker cabinet to get good bass, low frequencies, sounds. Most amplifiers were mono, one speaker. Stereo sound was still relatively new, and no TV broadcasts nor many recordings were available in stereo, with two speakers. 1963 winter. Take a good long look at the picture on the left. This is how Pulteney Weir in Bath used to look in 1963. The River Avon is frozen over, even the water falling over the weir. This winter, from December 1963, we experienced sub-zero temperatures until late March in 1964. I actually rode my push bike to my girlfriend's house on the London Road during this winter. Her mom bought me a pair of woolen gloves and scarf. Was I keen on her or what? Made with NAMU 6.